Throwbacks with Derek J. Murphy, chapter 1, verse 3. What's good? Welcome or welcome back to the only place where we discuss the unexpected theology of old school hip hop and R&B. That's right, it's Throwbacks. I'm your host, Derek J. Murphy, and I am so pleased to have you with us today. This podcast is based on the book that I've written, Throwbacks, where we take old songs from my childhood, my years of coming into age, songs that made a difference to me, songs that I remember, songs that I still hear today, and bump them like they came out last week, songs that define a generation. And I discuss what they mean to me, what they mean in their context. And then I take that song and I flip it to hopefully add inspiration, motivation, value, and insight in your life. I wanted to continue this conversation with this podcast, and so I hope that you are gaining value from the discussions that we're having and the trips down memory lane, and I appreciate you joining. If you're interested in reading the book, you can visit my website, derekjmurphy.com, order the book there, and if you are wanting more and more of these conversations, more and more of these discussions, click subscribe and so that you can be notified anytime we have a new episode drop. And with that being said, let's get right into the year 1987. That's right, 1987. This was the year that Oliver North and the Iran-Contra affair were major thorns in the side of President Ronald Reagan. This was also the year, 1987, that a severe stock market crash with losses upwards of $1.7 trillion happened, called Black Monday. So much for Reaganomics, right? 1987 was the year that Michael Jackson released his first album, post-Thriller. And we all were looking at that cover like, who is this person? Because Michael Jackson didn't look like Michael Jackson to us. 1987, I was in second grade. And I mentioned Michael Jackson. We're not going to talk about him today. We're going to go all the way to Minneapolis, Minnesota, the home of Prince Rogers Nelson. That's why we have the light on purple today. And we're going to talk about Janet Jackson. I know. She's not from Minneapolis. She's from Gary, Indiana, just like Michael. But it's because of her work with Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis that we have the incomparable album, Control. And Janet Jackson, because of this album and because of her work with Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, became one of the biggest artists of our time. You know, it really surprised me. I was talking to my daughter the other day, and she told me, "Dad, I didn't really know that Janet Jackson was that big of a deal." And I was flabbergasted. Janet Jackson is one of the biggest artists of the 80s, one of the biggest artists of our time, and still selling out arenas like crazy today. She is a very, very important artist, and you almost kind of have to be if you're Michael Jackson's sister. But you wouldn't have known that in 1984, 1987, 1985, because she had had two albums that didn't just quite hit. I mean, they were moderate successes, but they didn't have any memorable hits. They didn't have a whole lot of radio play. It just didn't quite hit. And so she decided to go in another direction and exert some control over her musical career, because we all know Joe Jackson was had an iron claw hold on to her career, and she wanted things to go in another direction. And this is when she hooked up with hitmakers Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. Now, Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis were a part of a band called Morris Day and the Time. You might remember them from Purple Rain. You might remember them from The Bird. You might remember them from Jungle Love. They were responsible for some of that sound. And even though they come from Indianapolis, they had a unique sound of their own that, though it incorporated that Minneapolis sound, that Prince sound, they had a unique production element that they gave when they produced Janet Jackson's Control album. This particular song that we're talking about today is called The Pleasure Principle. It is the last single of the Control album, which seems to be an album full of singles. That's kind of the way they had to do it back then. But this was the last single. This was the last single to get a video. And it was probably her least successful single when it comes to the Control album. But I didn't know this until I did research for this particular project, that this was the only track on the album that was not produced by Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. It was written by Monte Moir. I believe I'm saying that name right. And he was the keyboardist for the time, which goes to show that they did similar work. It sounds like it could have been produced by Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. And with him being the keyboardist for the time, it has that signature Minneapolis sound. It was even recorded in Flight Time, which is the studio for Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. Now, as for the song is definitely an R&B song, but it has a dance pop beat wrapped all around the R&B concept. The song is very synth heavy, meaning the keyboards, almost all the sounds were programmed, and this was the sound of the time. If you were to listen to songs from the 80s, this would be very similar to just about everything that came out during that time, especially pop music, because it was very synth heavy. And again, it had that signature Minneapolis sound. I remember the video. Boy, do I remember the video. I know I was only in the second grade and I didn't really like girls yet. But when this video came out, I think I started to understand. I mentioned in the book when we talked about the Control album, I did Control in the book, and my brother was in love with Janet. And there was one part in the song in Control where she says, "Don't make me lose it." My brother said, "I'll help you find it." And I didn't really understand. I mean, Janet Jackson, she was pretty and all that kind of stuff. But when this video came out, boy, I think I understood. She's in a warehouse, seemingly practicing her dance moves by herself. She's wearing a pair of black Guess jeans, a t-shirt that's rolled up in the front and has some of her midriff showing. She had long straight hair with bang. She was wearing knee pads and tennis shoes. It's like she was coming to the warehouse to practice dancing alone. This video was a lot grittier than most of her other videos. Most of her other videos had high production value, but this was very gritty. If you look at some of the scenes, she lifts up her hand and you can see Band-Aids on her hand. There's a point in the video where she's dancing in front of a broken mirror. So this has an edgier, grittier overtone to the video. A little darker. And of course, this was a Janet Jackson that was a bit more adult than we were used to. She really kind of came into her own with this video. Now, when it came to the lyrics, I was in the second grade. I didn't know what it was about. In fact, you probably couldn't have paid me to give you lyrics from the song before I did this project. I was in the second grade. I didn't know what the song was about. But Moir, when he was writing the song, he had the music already, but he struggled with the lyrics. And after working with Janet on the first verse, he stumbled upon this concept by Sigmund Freud called the pleasure principle. And this is what it means. The pleasure principle, the Freudian concept, means it's an instinctive seeking of pleasure and avoiding of pain to satisfy biological and psychological needs. In other words, it's the basic idea for instant gratification. And when he came across this concept, it just kind of fit what they were already talking about. And that became the direction that the lyrics went in. And so in the song, Janet is talking about taking control of a loveless relationship by refusing to settle for materialism. Wouldn't that concept, that talking point, be good in that whole dating conversation that we're having today? Because here she is saying that she would rather walk away from this relationship instead of staying in it because he's buying her expensive things. Listen to what some of the words say. She says in the song, in the first verse, I thought that it was happiness, but it was only part-time bliss. Later on, she says, where'd you get the idea of material possession? Thank you for the ride, nowhere. And all she's saying here is that she's not interested in something meaningless in order to just get things. She would rather have love, essentially. Now, the impact of the song, it wasn't her biggest hit, but it was a lasting one. It peaked at number 14 on the Billboard Hot 100, and it's still played on the radio today every now and again. And it has remained on her concert set list whenever she goes on tour. In fact, several pop stars and R&B artists have referenced or have been inspired by the song. Maya, Ciara, Britney Spears have all pointed to this particular song or this video as a means of inspiration for their own careers and their own music. So how do we get from Janet, Jimmy Jam, Terry Lewis, Minneapolis Sound, Pleasure Principle, how do we get from that to adding value to our life? Well, the scripture is Matthew 7, 24 through 27. And it reads, therefore, anyone who hears these words of mine and acts on them may be compared to a wise man who built his house on the rock. And then the rain fell and the floods came and the winds blew and slammed against the house. And yet it did not fall, for it had been founded on the rock. Everyone who hears these words of mine and does not act on them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. The rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew and slammed against the house, and it fell. And it was a great fall. For me, it's the taste of the first shaved ice of the season, which is usually coconut, by the way. It's also singing a song with my family and dancing in my seat on a long road trip. Best yet, it's a nice, quiet, romantic night with my wife. Pleasure. Pleasure is the gratification of being pleased. In other words, pleasure describes the feeling we get when we get something that we like. Pastor Iron Petrie gave me the best perspective on this by saying that we don't have any control over what we like. We just experience them by feeling, tasting, smelling, seeing, or hearing, and it pleases us. Now, the pleasure principle, as part of the Freudian psychoanalysis, is the instinctive drive to pursue pleasure and avoid pain. Most of us find this instinct at play in our lives and in just about every area of our lives. In our culture, we live by the philosophy, if it makes you feel good, do it. We have allowed the principle of pleasure to emerge as the principal force in our life. However, what makes us human is the ability to reason. We have the capacity to weigh options and sensibly discern what's good, bad, right, and wrong. This is a gift from God, and it's the reason that we have dominion on this planet. Well, that and opposable thumbs. If you allow yourself to be driven solely by the instinct to pursue pleasure, you make yourself just another dim-witted animal. Pleasure doesn't always lead to happiness. Instead of the pleasure principle, we should pursue the peace principle. I believe the peace principle is the reasonable ability to pursue peace and avoid confusion or chaos. There are plenty of times when, if we had only stopped ourselves long enough to evaluate the situation, we would have not pursued some pleasures, because in the end, they only brought about grief. You have the ability to willingly pursue peace, and peace will consistently make you happier than pleasure ever will. Peace will always be more beneficial than pleasure, because in and of itself, pleasure is empty. If you let pleasure drive you, it will often lead you on a road to nowhere. But peace, on the other hand, will consistently lead you on a road of contentment, satisfaction, and joy. Pleasure in the moment can bring misery in the future. Just ask any kid who ate too much candy. But peace with yourself, peace with others, and peace with God will ultimately bring you peace of mind. And peace of mind will always keep you happy. And that's the pleasure principle. Thank you. If you made it to the end of this episode, I pray that something has been said to encourage you, to inspire you, to motivate you to find what's best for your life, and better yet, what God has for your life. I want to thank you for joining me. And if you're interested in subscribing, please click the subscribe button and be notified anytime we drop a new episode. If you want to buy the book, visit my website. And for everything else, look down in the show notes and you can get all of my information. And so, with that being said, know that God loves you best. I love you best I can. And we'll see you the next time.